Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along Show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 223. Tonight's show is brought to you by Fire, and we'll get into that in a moment. It's just the boys tonight. Andrea is sitting one out. She's on other adventures, as they would say on the Stuff They Don't Want You to Know podcast, and tonight it is Kenny and I. And my microphone's probably going to make weird noises while I move it around. So what I've been doing is normal stuff, meaning did a little trainer riding and really just that's it. Nothing huge on my side. Haven't rode a motorcycle, haven't worked on any cars, and have not personally set anything on fire in the last few days. But fires have been happening.
Were you by chance at the Rad Power store?
I wasn't, but I love the fact that you already know about it. So
maybe I was at the Rad Power store.
Let's not talk about that. What have you been doing?
On Sunday, I drove to the old missile base and rode some moto. And the missile base is like no more, which is a bummer. There's a few random outbuildings that you can find here and there, but like the big three launch sites in Green River where they launched all those Athena ICBM missiles for testing, they totally tore all that stuff out. They even ripped out like the foundations and stuff, which is weird to me. That just doesn't seem worth the time, but whatever. Maybe there was like contamination or something.
Or unless they didn't want people to see what the foundation looked like.
Yeah, I think in the 60s and 70s at this point, I don't think they give a shit. Could be wrong. But those buildings were just open to the public for like a long time. I'm going to say at least 10 years, could have been 20 years, but at least 10, where the fence was just open. You could just walk in and there was like huge buildings still there, like ones that could house very large rockets. But unfortunately, I missed my opportunity to, you know, really explore it. I knew it was there, but I think they tore it down a few years ago. Anyway, not that important. But I was riding in that.
So you never got to do a big burnout inside?
I've always wanted to do a burnout in a missile silo. So I'll have to go find another one.
On it. I may or may not have seen footage of someone doing donuts inside the pros closet on the last day in a probably 2007 to 10 single cab, long wheelbase Chevy Silverado. Just ripping shitties indoors. It was amazing.
I love it. I love it. There's just something really cool about the whole urban exploration thing, especially old relics of war. They're just crazy. Like, it's so fascinating. All the tech and time and money and all that crazy stuff. It's just wild. But yeah,
all right.
I rode my moto down there. It was fun. I did a very similar loop to what I've done in the past. It's been really chilly here, so I just wanted to get out of town. And yeah, it was just a good time. Motorcycle runs like a top. It was 10 degrees warmer down there and not crappy air quality. But that's it. Nothing crazy to report. I think I did 60 miles, something like that, over maybe like 3 hours. I did have to lay her down once, unfortunately. But yeah, it was pretty low speed. I crashed it.
Lay her down.
Sometimes you got to lay it down.
I thought you meant like change clothes, like you had to stop and do like a clothing change, like go down a layer in clothing. No, you mean like, hold on, Bob or Bub, we're going to lay her down. Like, what happened? Go more into it. Did you get scared and just use too much front brake?
No, I just got cross rutted in a sand section and I was trying to get from one rut over to the other. It was a little deeper sand than I thought. And, you know, you get your weight going where you think it needs to go to make the turn, and then you turn. And the bike doesn't turn, and then all your weight's kind of committed to the wrong side. And yeah, just push the front end.
Were you going fast?
10 or 15.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, it wasn't like, you didn't wad it up at like 60.
No, it wasn't too bad at all. I just, I barely was able to run it out. So I actually stayed up on my feet, which is pretty cool.
Oh, so you didn't even use your full face. You just said fuck you Husky and just ran away.
I just used my legs, which is pretty cool. And
dude, you can walk.
Yeah, I don't like running that fast, but sometimes you got to.
In boots.
But you know, I just kind of sat there and stared at the motorcycle on its side for a minute while it was still running, and said like, huh. Said something exactly. I was like you do. But yeah, that was it. It was a fun little trip. Did anything else happen? I don't think so. That's all I got. We've got a decent amount of news to talk about. Plus, I think last show, we probably neglected a few listener questions. And there's some people that are angry at me about Arden still. So we can talk about that.
Like, they're angry that you think it was a good tire?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think it was a good tire in the same way that, like, the original Jet 9 was a good bike. But, like, it's 10 years later or 15 years later, and it's just not relevant anymore.
You're probably not wrong. But at the same time, I rode maybe not the newest rubber compound, but the DHF, for example, hasn't changed a whole lot in 10 years, has it? Or am I crazy?
I think, and we were talking about this a little bit in the last show, but I mean, I think a big part of it too, though, is the DHF fills a niche, and now we have other tires filling in around that tire. But I mean, I would love for someone to, I don't want to say prove to me, but God, I got to go to the Maxxis website right quick.
What I'm getting at is I rode DHFs way back in the day, and I kind of thought they were garbage.
Yeah, they don't have any intermediate knobs.
Yeah, for the riding that I did, which was mostly hard pack, it wasn't really loose over. It was like hard pack with a few leaves down type stuff. And of all the tires we had to choose from, the Icon Ardent was my personal favorite. Now, granted, everyone's going to have a different opinion. They ride in different conditions. They ride the bike differently. Maybe it was that tire was decent on bikes that you turned essentially with the handlebars, like with your upper body almost. It wasn't bikes that you push the cranks into the ground to turn, because that's just not how the geo of those old bikes were. You kind of just turned with your shoulders and the bike turned.
You steered the bike. You didn't drive the bike.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe that's part of it. Maybe that tire doesn't lend itself to more modern handling techniques with, you know, dropper down most of the time, all that kind of stuff, and driving with your hips and all that. Who knows? But either way, I still stand by the fact that it was a very good front tire. I tried to run it on the back once. It was just horrifically slow. Surprise, surprise. But at the same time, what I'm saying is in that era, on the trails that I rode a DHF. And I thought it was hot garbage. Not that DHF isn't, you know, the all-encompassing tire. It's absolutely not. It just has it does well in loam. We didn't really have loam.
Yeah, and the DHF is a tire that I don't like to this day. I've never taken them off of a bike, but like now that I've ridden other stuff, I'm much happier. But before we get too far into my explanation of a different tire, you know, pull up the picture of a Forecaster right now. Like, it's 2012. You put an Ardent and an Icon on your bike. It's 2025. You put a Forecaster and a Recon on your bike. You know, they're doing the same things, just better.
Oh, I agree.
Do you disagree?
Ed, would I say that the Recon is a better tire, honestly, front or rear, compared to an Icon Ardent? 100%. I would have been probably pretty darn happy. I probably would have done something like an Ardent 2.2 on the back and a 2.4 or something like that on the front, and just run a plain Jane Ardent front rear. Or Ardent, I say Ardent. What did
Recon,
I just say? Recon is what I meant to say. I'd run a Recon 2.2 rear, a Recon 2.4 front, and that would be phenomenal. I think a Forecaster also would probably be pretty similar, although I haven't spent time on the new Forecaster. It looks cool, but I'm worried that it's going to handle like the ground control, the newer-ish ground control, maybe last generations, had a very similar knob-looking pattern where it's got those nice medium-sized knobs, and there's a bunch of them, and it's got intermediate ones and all that. But there was something about that tire. It was just wiggly feeling, and I hated it. I thought I was going to love that tire based on the tread pattern, and that ground control was one of the worst tires I've ridden in a long time.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I mean, if we went back to Memphis and I had the tires at my disposal today and the rims at my disposal today, I would be running like a 2.6, 2.4 combo in a Recon with like a 30 mil internal rim on a rigid bike. You know, that would have been phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, it'd have been dope.
You know, I don't know that a 2.4 Recon would really clear the back of a Crave. Like the 2.35 Icon on a 21 rim was like pushing it, but you know, magic time travel and slight massaging of chainstays before they released that bike, that would have been really hard to beat for the terrain we were riding. Or even a, you know, because there's not really much out of the saddle pedaling in Memphis, and you're riding on dirt, you know, you have good traction. I think, a Recon Aspen would have been, I don't think an Aspen front would have been a good option for Memphis. It's just a little, wouldn't have bit through the leaves very well, but Recon Aspen would be really good, I think.
Yeah, I think it would be reasonable, without a doubt. So if you had to give up one thing, imagine you had to go back and ride in Memphis today. Maybe, I'll take that back. Go back and ride in Memphis on the trails we used to ride. Not that there's a lot of new ones, but you're on.
No, I understand what you're saying.
You have modern bike tech, all right? We go back. We have modern bike tech.
Yep.
Would you rather give up the modern cockpit wide bar, or would you give up the modern tires?
I would give up the bars.
And that's assuming that the riding would be tailored to the modern cockpit. Like, it wouldn't be quite as tree gatey as it was when we were there. Like, if you had the modern cockpit, it would be rideable versus the tires.
I understand what you're saying, like, but I run a 750 bar. So for me to go back to a 710 Niner bar, like, if I could run a 710 bar and a 2.6 front. And when you say tires, I'm assuming that I could get a rim that supported
yes.
the tire. Yeah,
well. Tire wheel tire combo.
Yeah. I mean, if I could go to Memphis tomorrow, like, you could teleport me back to Memphis, I would want to take a 27 to 30 millimeter internal rim with a 2.6, 2.4 tire combo and a dropper post over a wide bar.
Wasn't it crazy when that 9 or 710 bar came out and you were just smacking trees with that thing? I'm sure the trails have probably evolved as well, so they're probably not as tree gatey as they used to be.
Yeah, and I understand a lot more than I did back then. So I've always, not always, I have done some trail work here and there over my career or time as a mountain biker. And I think being able to take my experience back with me would be really good, because I think a lot of the, and for the seven people that have ever ridden in Memphis, like, the stuff in Memphis that was really good was all really good. But then there was a bunch of stuff that was just jank, and it was built for like walking pace. So the tree gates were just horrendous, right? So I would take my knowledge of trail work and the other trails that I've seen. And, you know, there's a number of times that I had, there's one really good thing that stands out to me is there was a spot that you could have easily parked two full-size pickup trucks side by side in the trail on Wolf River Yellow at one point. And one day it was too wet to really ride, and I like eased in there by bike. You know, when I say too wet to really ride, there was like water holes, and I just set out to close down that hugeness, but I did it in a way that rode well, right? There wasn't some, you're hauling ass a 90 degree corner through a tree gate and then this new trail that was all tree gates, and then you pop back out on the old trail. I just scooted it all uphill that 6 or 8 inches in elevation that it needed. And like 2 weeks later, when it was dry and I rode it, I missed the zone, meaning like I rode the trail and I couldn't tell what I had made narrow. And that's something that I've always been really proud of. And I think I would spend more of my time on endeavors like that, like, get up, ride the trainer. You know, it's too wet to ride outdoors. Get up, ride the trainer. Go fill in a few holes and, you know, narrow something in. And yeah, that's answering your question different than you asked. But I think that a lot of the reason that tree gates were there is because a lack of understanding by people kind of cutting in rogue trails, along with a lack of others really like polishing up the trails that already existed to make them a little bit more usable in terms of moisture resilience and, you know, just enjoyment. So
I would argue that in most of those places, it's not that you can't have any trees, and maybe it was you don't want to just roll into one of these places with a chainsaw and cut down a fairly large tree. That seems to be a little bit more impact than was needed. Mm-hmm. But I think long term, if those trails were built a little bit more proper, we could ride them faster. I just think they would be more fun. I think if a few trees had to die in the process, I think it would just be better long term, and they'd be more fun, more fast trails. I think if all the effort to preserve those trees, if you will, went into slightly better drainage or cutting the trail in a place in the ground that was higher up to begin with, for example, like getting rid of low spots, yep. basically, that would be way more beneficial than having a trail that's more like natural and technical. That's my opinion. Not saying that that's right. Mm-hmm. I understand why people want to do tree gates is because, hey, if it's kind of flat and boring, make it more technical. Like, I get it. But riding bikes on semi-groomed trails is a lot of fun. I think it'd be hard for anyone to argue that that's not the case. Like, who doesn't love getting to that section of the trail where you're just like railing? It's just fun, right? Mm-hmm. Do people love getting to the section of the trail where you're going like 90 degree left, 90 degree right, 90 degree left, and like barely staying upright on your bike and you know, buzzing your bar and hitting your hand and shit? Like, I mean, come on. It's fun to get through there when your buddy doesn't make it, for example. Like, you make it, your buddy doesn't. I guess that's mm-hmm. entertaining, but is that really fun? I mean, come on.
Yeah. And, you know, going back to what you were talking about with trees, I want everyone that hasn't been in the South, in the woods in the South, trees are not the same. You know, if we cut down a tree here, it's a commitment. You know, it's like when we moved in, there was this little pine tree growing by the well, like access, like pipe stop sticking out of the ground, and it was like, oh, I don't know, 3.5-4 inches tall, and I was like, I know that tree shouldn't grow right here by my well. And 3 years later, I pulled it up and it was like 6 inches tall, you know. And there's trees that when I moved in were like waist high, and now they're like belly button high, you know. So in the South, you can cut down that 8-inch pine tree, and the light that hits the forest floor, because that missing 10 feet away, that little sapling will explode over the next few years. So we're not like scarifying the land, but staying with that, we're cutting down trees. I wanted to clarify that before, you know, and I now also understand that if you're going to cut that tree down, we probably should cut it off at waist high and then use a come along and rip the root ball out of the ground and build the trail right there without a pedal striking stump in the way. So, you know, that I think that would be like the next level of it, of not just cutting the tree down, but removing the tree from the trail corridor in its entirety. So, yeah, I'm sure that great things are happening back there, but I don't take a bike with me when I go to Memphis because I don't need poison ivy.
I definitely don't miss riding mountain bikes in Memphis. I miss riding with the people that I rode with in Memphis and that whole group and all the mm-hmm. stuff that was going on, but I don't miss the trails in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and I do. The one really cool thing about how the trails were in Memphis is an overwhelming amount of the population could ride to the trail because of the sprawl of like the river trail. It was pretty easy to get on the trail and cruise. So I don't know. Yeah. Obviously, I'm glad I rode mountain bikes there because now I ride mountain bikes here. And yeah, there was a lot of good memories. But
all right, well, we talk about that was a pretty fat tangent right there on the fact that somebody didn't like my tire selection from 15 years ago. But let's see. What do we got here? Do we want to just start hitting some new stuff here? Do we have questions pulled up?
I can probably have us a question or two in the near future.
All right, well, let's start with some news stuff then.
Can we start with the sad stuff?
Okay, so that means not Rad Power. Got it.
John Barnett has passed.
I did read that.
So whether or not you believe the mechanics that came out of his school were good or not, he did have a huge impact on the industry, and he passed away, and that is always sad. So
I think everybody, generally speaking, knew what Barnett's school was.
Yep.
Also, people dying, Blackburn. I don't have it pulled up right now, but I guess I assume the founder of Blackburn.
Jim Blackburn has passed, yes. I'm 90% sure that's his name.
But yeah, they were one of the early mainstream brands of a lot of things. Pumps and lights and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he died at 86 years old. We might have talked about that, or we might have just missed that in the last show.
I think we missed it.
He passed away about 9 days ago as time of recording. So yeah, I mean, he really led the way. Like, he wasn't a bicycle pioneer, but he really helped people kit out their bicycles. So yeah, I mean, and for what it's worth, I probably installed a countless number of Blackburn racks in my days, and they all worked fine. So, you know, it's It's something that is very unfortunate, but we live in a really, or we enjoy a really young industry. And I think that over the course of our lives, we're going to see, I mean, not to be ugly, but just with life expectancies and stuff, you know, gosh, why can't I think of the guy from Trek right now? What's the Trek guy's name? He's alive.
Oh, are you talking about Gary Fisher?
No, not Gary Fisher. Trek.
Oh. Who is the original Trek person? When I think of Trek and like old time Trekkers, I think Gary Fisher.
Yeah, but he was a separate brand.
I know. Yeah, the Trek person's not
John Burke.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I guess Richard Burke is probably still alive. Oh no, Richard Burke has passed, but John Burke, you know, who's carried the torch for Trek for a long time, he'll pass. Sinyard will pass. Fisher will pass. You know, like, these people aren't going to live forever, and it's a bummer. But I do think that there are other people in the industry that, not to say these people haven't done great things, I think we are living among other people doing great things. You know, like, I can't think of a person offhand, but you know what I mean? Like, there's just, like, the founders of SRAM, they'll pass one day. You know, they're not young. I met Stan once. He's not a young chicken. A spring chicken anymore, you know, and hopefully I live longer than he does, because by the numbers I should, and that'll be a sad day. So yeah, I mean, I'm not downplaying it, but like, we kind of have the opportunity to like brush shoulders with giants and do it while you can.
All right, Matt's motivational speech: everybody dies.
I think that's a kid's book, actually.
Oh, is it really? Jeez.
I'm pretty sure there's one, Everybody Poops.
Yeah, you know, Everybody Poops and Everybody Dies are very different subject matter.
Oh, I'm sorry. Everybody Poops is a kid's book. Everybody Dies is a dark humor that is illustrated as a kid's book. sorry. In other news, talking about things that die via the axe, Canyon to reduce workforce by 320 people. Canyon said it's aiming to reduce complexity and simplify processes, a procedure that includes reducing its workforce by up to 320 workers. In cycling, you don't win a race through sheer size, but through speed, precision, and agility. We are now laying the foundation to regain our operational power and strengthen our position at the top of the cycling industry, said Roman Arnold, Canyon's founder and executive chairman. Its reductions will be its core locations of about, that includes about 1,600 people.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The company said the goal is to make the process transparent, fair, and with the utmost respect for the affected employees.
But they also said in a previous press release a week or two ago, they said that they want to be either the first or just get to $1 billion in yearly revenue. Well, I guess that's how you do it. You fire everybody? Not sure that's how you do it.
I think you have to do that by having locations where people can walk in the door and spend money at your local bike shop. And I think that in order to do that, you need to sell bicycles that cover the entire spectrum. You know, I'm not saying I...
Who do you think, switching gears a tiny bit, but also in the same vein, what's the biggest direct-to-consumer thing that has been successful without brick and mortar locations?
Oh, I don't know.
Because I'm thinking like, Tesla comes to mind, but they're more like company owned things in their dealerships, right? So instead of being the private dealership model of normal automotive companies, but they still have these locations. And they definitely, they were able to, I think, sell a lot of cars with very few locations for a really long time. And they had, you know, I guess warehouses and somebody would drive the car to you type stuff or whatever. I think they got away with it for a long time. And I think they realized that that was not sustainable, in the same way that they used to be proud that they had no marketing. Like, oh, wow, our product's just so amazing, we never have to market it. And look at now, there's Tesla ads everywhere. And they don't advertise maybe as much as some bigger brands, but they seem to have caved in. So I'm not saying that direct to consumer is wrong. I think it can work. But I just wonder, how big can you really get it without having an IBD style presence? And it doesn't need to be IBD. It could just be some type of semblance of brick and mortar.
Yeah, but even, you know, I can walk in, and Apple came to mind, but, you know, you can walk into Walmart and buy Apple headphones. You can walk into I don't know. Does Apple or Walmart still sell iPhones?
I don't know, but like Best Buy does. Costco does. A whole bunch of places.
AT&T does.
Every single cell phone provider, you roll into a Verizon or an AT&T or a T-Mobile place and they sell you the phone. And clearly you can also just get your iPhone mailed to you. That's not a problem at all. But even those companies.
Or you can go to one of their, let's call them like experience centers in the bicycle terms, you know, a flagship store, and you can get it from the Apple store. Yep. You know, so they do have a brick and mortar, but
it just makes me wonder, how big can Canyon get with having basically zero brick and mortar presence?
Well, and with that, though, I'm going to make a statement that's really dumb. I don't want someone to correct me, but like, I don't think Apple is excited to sell me wired headphones. But I think they're like, dude, we make these for like 27 cents and these schmucks pay $20 for them, right? So they make them because they make money. I don't know that Specialized is really stoked on every Rockhopper comp they produce, but you got to sell Rockhoppers because they make money. You know, that's, I guess, what I'm seeing with Canyon is if they wanted to become a dominant force, you kind of need to sell a entry-level bike. And you can't sell an entry-level bike through the mail because it costs too much to ship. Every bike costs the same to ship. I understand there's going to be variances. It's cheaper to ship a double extra small road bike than it is going to be shipping an extra large aluminum e-bike, right? I understand there's different costs, but in this grand scheme of things, shipping a bike is roughly, I don't know, someone the size of a Canyon is probably paying in the neighborhood of like a, I would guess it's a three-digit number, but just barely, you know, maybe $100 to ship anywhere in the continental U.S. And when the bike's $800, that's 15% of the cost. When the bike is $8,000, that's 1.5% of the cost. So Jimmy that wants to buy a Rockhopper is going to have a really hard time paying the extra $100, whether that is a shipping line item at checkout or that is factored into the price of the bicycle. It's going to happen somewhere, and that's just going to be tough. And the person buying the $800 hardtail doesn't want to put it together themselves. They want to come and they want to buy a bike and a helmet and a water bottle cage and a bottle and a funny sticker and a bell. And that's great. You know, I don't think this is true, but we probably sell, I'm going to guess, or let's just talk in dollars. I don't sell five Rockhoppers at $1,000 for every $5,000 Epic Evo we sell. That just doesn't happen. But we stock those Rockhoppers, one, because it's awesome to see someone get a new bike, and two, that fits a lot of people's budgets. And I don't know what Canyon's most affordable mountain bike is, but I'm going to figure that out right now while Kenny gives his thoughts.
Yeah, I didn't know exactly where we were going with that. I know I brought it up. What were we talking about? Oh, Canyon reducing workforce, yeah. It's just interesting. And can they, do they need to make an $800 Rockhopper competitor? I don't know that they do. I mean, look at Apple. Yeah. Do they sell some headphones and some other stuff? Yeah, they do. But generally speaking, they don't sell anything cheap other than accessories. They just don't. What's the cheapest freaking iPhone you can buy and own? $600? I think it's somewhere in that ballpark. You know, what's the cheapest laptop you can buy? $1,000?
Maybe. I mean, their most affordable bikes, and we're going to talk retail prices because they do have some stuff on sale. $1,100 Jerk Jump bike, that is in line
with
the industry.
Yeah, that doesn't really count because that's not a ubiquitous, like, just hardtail. That's such a niche bike.
I don't think they even have hardtails. I sorted mountain bikes cheap to expensive, and I'm finding the Neuron, which is essentially like a just a trail bike, and it's $2,400 retail.
But maybe that's why they're not doing it. Could they sell a hardtail because they're direct to consumer a little bit cheaper than everybody else? But yeah, just like you said, once they factor in shipping, I think that nullifies pretty much any advantage that they would have. I think they have the advantage in the expensive stuff because saving $500 for the same component spec versus everybody else, that's a pretty big deal. But having a hardtail that's $50 or $100 less than everybody else, I just don't know that people care. And then having zero support on that product and not being able to just go pick it up and it be ready to go. Maybe they're just not interested in being in that segment at all.
Well, but that's the thing is you won't be interested in that. If, you know, we get rock hoppers by the pallet, so that makes sense. You know, when you get a pallet of rock hoppers, it makes sense. And when you have 8 to 12 rock hoppers floored and ready for someone to buy when they walk by, that makes sense. I also don't think that $1,000 or sub-$1,000 hardtail is something that someone buys online. I think they need to go, I think they want that in-person experience of, you know, talking to someone before they buy it.
I mean, maybe. I don't know that they do. I don't know that that person wants that experience any more or less than someone who's really experienced, you know, someone who's going to crawl Pink Bike for advice and hates IBDs and is going to buy something online all the time, whatever. I don't know that those people are that different on wanting to or not wanting to go to an IBD to get a bike. But anyway, we can shift gears from the Canyon thing.
You want to talk about Rad Power?
Sure do.
So just to recap, Rad Power bikes catch on fire. Rad Power says there's nothing wrong with their batteries. They won't issue a recall. The CSPC is like, you should not ride this. And they're like, nah, it's fine. It's fine. And then published yesterday, this is on the old Bicycle Retailer and Industry News, a fire started in Rad Power Bikes retail store here on Sunday night. This is Huntington Beach. Is under investigation by the Huntington Beach Fire Department. And they say, we're working with local authorities to review a thermal incident that occurred at our Huntington Beach store Sunday evening, a Rad Power spokesperson told Brain. The incident was contained and happened while the store was closed. The cause of the fire has not been confirmed.
Yeah, everything about that is fine. And could this have not been a bicycle? 100%. It's definitely possible. However,
like, could there have been, like,
why do they say thermal incident?
I mean, it could have been like, and here's the thing. If they were like, I am going to go to bat here and say, if like, oh man, one of our mechanics wanted to coat their old steel frame internally with linseed oil and they left a rag on their bench and it spontaneously combusted, they would be shouting that from the rooftops. Like, this was a chemical, a poor...
Or if they said, I don't know, yeah, there was an electrical fire in the structure, had nothing to do with bikes, they would 100% have said that first thing.
Yes. They would be touting like, oh no, like, you know, a crackhead lit a mattress on fire on the roof. They would be talk like, you know, what could be an act of vandalism or carelessness, a mattress was lit on fire on our roof by a local person. Or, yeah, there was a, you know, like you said, an electrical fire, you know, an infrastructure issue that broke out in the maintenance, or the, what would that be called, the electrical room of the strip mall.
Or it was like a volcano.
Yeah, like... a volcano erupted in the parking lot and hot magma landed on our roof. No, I think it's, Jake, I'm sorry if I'm wrong. I'm not going to Google this. I think it's magma when it's inside the earth and lava when it's outside the earth.
It's that sounds right. I don't know which one's which.
Now I'm going to.
Yeah, most rocks are
now
hard.
I'm going to Google it. Yep, magma is when it's inside and lava is when it's outside.
What if it's inside a store?
I think because it has broken through the mantle of the earth, it would be considered lava. It's like if lava ran down the street and then spilled into your convertible Mustang, it doesn't become magma again.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm just saying.
Could be building magma.
I guess at some point if the crust, like, you know, if that Mustang sat there for years, millions of years, and it was right along what are these things called, tectonic plates? And then it did I can't think of the word. Jake is screaming at his podcast right now, but when like one layer slips under another and then it goes down, down, down to the earth, then there's a type of rock that would be made from that lava that is now converted and the Mustang into magma. So Jake is screaming at his, at the speakers or headphones
but,
or whatever.
I mean, the thing is, he's not a volcano guy. He's more of like a mine guy.
No, he's a geologist.
Yeah, you know, it's been too long since he's been to lava school. I don't think he remembers all that stuff.
He is going to come ride the Rainbow Trail with me.
Sick.
So that's cool. I did some more hard sleuthing, the single track is only about 60 miles. I thought it was closer to 80. And Andrea really has doubts on my abilities, so I got to get fit to prove her wrong. I'm just going to do it out of spite.
I think you'll be fine. You're good at bikes, and you can do other stuff good, too.
Yeah, it'll just be a long day with a good friend. And, yeah.
Excellent. So, yeah, Rad Power burnt down and was probably an e-bike battery, but we don't know that for certain. Do we want to talk about the New Jersey e-bike stuff?
I'll be quite honest with you. I have not looked at that.
It's probably a big deal. So I'll go over it. I think it could set a huge precedent, and maybe this is being blown out of proportion, but based on other people in the industry talking about this, it seems to be a pretty big deal. So if this one sticks, it could be a model for other people. I don't know exactly where I land on this topic. I think that our class 1-2-3 system is a semblance of a solution. I think that it's far from perfect. I think it's still confusing to the average person. And there's a lot of companies that will basically lie about their stuff, call something class 3 when it's clearly not, et cetera, et cetera. But the gist of this New Jersey thing is this. New Jersey is saying, and I could be wrong, I read this, I think, pretty thoroughly, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but essentially, if there is a motor... If there is a motor on a bicycle, period, it doesn't matter if it's pedal assist. It doesn't matter if it's 10 watts. If your, I don't know, your dynamo hub were to be a power source off of a Duracell battery, that would be an electric motorcycle, essentially. And they're going to require some amount of insurance on it. I don't know exactly what that means. I don't know what the providers are going to be for such a thing. And you have to have a driver's license. You don't have to have a motorcycle endorsement, but you have to have a driver's license. And then they're going to come up with some special subcategory for like 15 and 16-year-olds or something like that, where they can get some halfway license to ride an e-bike. So, I think that's a little, that is a knee-jerk reaction, and that is taking it way too far, in my opinion. What they need to do is just crack down on these companies selling stuff that claim that they're class 1, 2, or 3 e-bikes that clearly are not, and they need to crack down on, you know, kids riding Surans on sidewalks, that kind of stuff. And I think the problem is not class 1, 2, and 3 e-bikes, but they're just lumping them all in one category, and it's going to cause a lot of mayhem and confusion. But yeah.
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts because I did breeze through this and list. I was like, looking at the Brain article. The one thing you missed that I want to touch on, all prohibits the online sale of any electric motorized bicycle for 1 year.
Okay.
That to me is the aha moment.
But it says literally first paragraph, New Jersey's governor signs a bill into law on Monday that will require license, registration, and insurance for all e-bike riders.
I understand that. However, the aha moment was this prohibition of online sales of electric motorized bicycles.
Okay. Which, yeah, that makes sense. So what they're saying, that I agree with, because what that's saying is if you want to buy an electric dirt bike or an electric motorcycle, you need to buy one from a licensed dealership, just like you would now. Like when you buy a motorcycle, you buy
it from... That's not what they said, Kenny.
Okay.
Prohibits the online sale of any electric motorized bicycle.
Okay. But it also says for 1 year. What does that mean?
For 1 year. Well, so I'm putting on my tinfoil hat here. I don't think that the cops are going to pull you over riding your Como to the grocery store. When you were saying people are strapping pedals, I can't think of the name off of the top of my head, but there's a bunch of stuff that is 100% not a motorcycle or not a bicycle or an e-bike that has pedals. It's like essentially a moped that has an electric motor.
Sure.
Like, and I think that one line really stands out to me is stopping the sale of like the Super 73 type stuff.
I get that. And I think that those need to be more regulated, but they've got some very confusing wording in here. Like one of these middle paragraphs where it lays out over 750 watts, over 28 miles an hour, e-motos, that's all great. But they also are saying that everybody is going to be required to have license, registration, and insurance for all e-bike riders. Or are they just – is this terrible wording and they're just saying those things that are e-motos are going to require license, registration, and insurance?
I think this is one of those situations where I mean, New Jersey's not very big, and they've had people dying, and I get it. Like, we don't want people dying, and I'm trying to, like, wrap my head around this, but again, this line really stands out to me, because what if it is as simple? So, license is really simple. You know, you're an adult, you want to buy a Como, you probably have a license. Registration, that's pretty simple. We don't know yet, but does that mean that it's going to be a simple proof of purchase and you mail it in with a $7, you know, a nominal processing fee?
Do we have to have a license plate?
Doesn't say anything about that.
Do we have to have a front one and a rear one? Do they have to be lighted?
Well, the insurance, I don't know what that's going to look like, but again, what if the insurance companies, I'm sure, are licking their chops, but, oh, you have a class one e-bike, it's $15 a year. Oh, you have a class two, it's $30 a year. Oh, you have a class three, it's $45 a year. I'm making all this up, obviously, as I go along. But I wonder if all of this is this, you know, and we're going to call it a hoop to jump through, but like, I have to go pay the state of Colorado $25.25 or some nominal fee to ride a dirt bike off-road in Colorado. Have to do it. My trials bike, never ridden on the road. I have to go get an OHV sticker, off-highway vehicle sticker for it. And that's just I'm paying into a fund, and that fund is used for a number of things across the state. And that does things that, you know, it funds the Forest Service crew that keeps the trails open. That's all fine. You know, I don't mind it. Where I'm going with all what I said so far is, does this mean when the dude on the Super 73 clocks somebody drunk, they're going to get in more trouble?
That's a great question.
When I look at all this, I see this as, you know, it's just a little hoop to, like, okay, I have to have an OHV sticker and a spark arrestor. That's what the state of Colorado says I have to have. No big deal. You know, the spark arrestor for my KTM was like $100. Maybe a little more or a little less. But the first year of riding that legally was under $200 in terms of things I had to do to be compliant with the state. Now, do they give me, like, they never sent me my stickers. I did not get my 2025 stickers. You go in, you pay for them, you're supposed to get them in the mail. They never showed up. I rode all year with no stickers. But I carried my little thing in my pocket that had my license on it. Like, you get, like, essentially what looks like a hunting license. So that's why I call it a license. It's not technically a license. But I get a little temp tag, essentially, that looks like a hunting license. They print them off on the same printer because it's the same people. And cool. Like, so I can, essentially just pay my money and I don't get in trouble. But I also never got checked all year. So does that mean that if the Forest Service caught me riding where I wasn't supposed to be riding and I didn't have a spark arrestor and I didn't have my OHV tag, would I get in more trouble? You bet your ass I would. And I look at this as an easy way for, you know, Jimmy and Sally cruising their Comos to the grocery store, riding down the bike lane with their helmet on, never going to get it stopped. But the jackass kids in town that 12 o'clock wheelie their Surons and mini Surons the wrong way on the one-way street past the shop every afternoon after school, those kids are getting fucked now. And I think that's fine. I just do. I there's a bike path in town, and I'm really surprised that someone has not gotten their car T-boned by someone riding a Suron at like 50 miles an hour yet. Because I cross the bike path every day on my way to work and on my way home from work. And I drive really slow and I look, but if it would be very easy for me to be like, oh, someone's coming with a headlight and continue on at 12 miles an hour. You know, if Jimmy was riding their bike downhill at 20, because this bike path runs through the city and slightly downhill, I will be clear of the intersection well before they get there. The Suron kid is going to T-bone me. Is it really my fault if they're riding a dirt bike, an electric dirt bike, on a non-motorized, you know, bicycle walking pedestrian path, and they T-bone me in the crosswalk? probably not going to get in any trouble personally. Is it? I don't want that to happen. But when that happens, if I were in New Jersey, oh, this kid with no license, no insurance, no registration on a vehicle that doesn't meet any of their requirements, that kid's in more trouble now, and probably their parents too. So that's what I see out of all this, is it's stopping the jank and not really going to make any meaningful impact to those that are above board. And I just don't see it as a problem. Like, I don't. If you can buy an e-bike, even the most affordable quality e-bike is, what, $2,000? You're going to be able to take care of the, I'm going to, again, throw out the number, you know, $150, $200 a year in, let's call it, additional fees. I mean, it's not that big of a deal.
The biggest thing that I take issue with is a existing class 1, 2, or 3 bike, that person having to register and insure and all the other bullshit that goes along with that. I think that's ridiculous. If they want to put like an age limit on that stuff, great. They can just say, I don't know, unless you've got some special requirement, you got to be of driving age, for example. Great. Just make it 16. Make it freaking simple. And just is what it is. But I don't like this everybody blanket statement on an e-bike.
Well, but hold on. Let's go back in time. Let's see. Hold on.
And one more thing I have issue with while you're looking that up.
Okay.
They're mentioning two people being killed. I don't know over what time period that is. That's terrible. But how many people per year in the U.S. are killed on bicycles per year? The answer is 1,000.
Is it really?
And I guarantee that it's only been increasing. I guarantee that 75% of those are involving a vehicle. And it's just so crazy how much people are just blown off when, for example, the quintessential person getting killed on a bicycle, from what I've seen, anecdotally, people around me, it's a road bike, riding on the road, not doing anything illegal, and getting smoked by a driver who is either drunk, aggressive, or not paying attention. And that's just written off as, oh, they're on a bicycle. That's it. So it bothers me that we're not worried about pursuing any of that stuff. That's fine. But God forbid there's a kid doing a wheelie on a Suron. That's what I take issue with.
Well, I understand where you're coming from. And where I was going, though, is like the Model A was released in 1903. States didn't have, like, I did some super Googling while you were doing this. Yeah, like, it says Massachusetts and Missouri were the first to require a driver's license in 1903, but there was no test. You just had to go get a driving license, right? And we don't have the time and the bandwidth to get into all of the whatnot, yada, yada, right?
I guess, where are you going with this?
Well, the law is always behind the technology. So, like, cars were released, and then they're like, shit, we need to get people like driver's licenses and probably have them take a test and this and that. And that didn't happen all at once. And now e-bikes are becoming very prevalent, and they're like, oh, shit, we probably need to get something in place so there's not just Yahoos 12 o'clock in their Surons everywhere.
Yeah, but that's also like saying back then that you need like a license to operate your horse, which I don't think you had to have, and I still don't think you have to have.
Yeah, let's not talk about horses. I hate horses fully. They're pack animals that aren't required to pack out their shit, and I just can't stand it. And they're these big, crazy, however much they weigh, 1,000-pound beasts that people can just wield around however they want. I don't think it's right. And if you live in Howard, Colorado, if your horse dies, you can just hook a chain to it and drag it like 4 miles to somewhere else and leave it in the woods. That definitely happened here. So, yeah.
What I'm getting at is I think they're going about this wrong. They need to go after the actual problem, which are unlicensed, actually really fast e-motorcycles / e-bikes that aren't really e-bikes. And I don't think they need to penalize everybody else. And they need to keep super young kids off of them. I think they need to figure out a way to do that. But I think the way this is worded, I think it's the wrong way to do it.
And I think the enforcement is going to be very lopsided in a way that you approve of, is my guess. Again, I don't think that the folks riding their Comos or their Vados or their whatevers to the grocery store are the ones that are going to get a ticket. I think it's a lot like, and this is tangential but related, my dad's friends with the local cops. When he asked the cops, why is the speed limit on this road 20 miles an hour? The answer was, because when we give you a ticket for 35, it's 15 over, and it won't get dismissed. If we raise the speed limit to 30, then you have to be doing 45 for it to not be dismissed, and we don't want people driving that fast. So you could drive 30 miles an hour on that road every day and you would never get pulled over. But if you drove 35, you would get pulled over and you would get a ticket. And I think what this is doing is it's going to allow, and I know that giving cops the power to make decisions about the general public is probably not the best thing, but it's going to give more credence and weight, because if they're like, no, it's a bicycle. Oh, where's your bicycle license and registration and insurance? Oh, you don't have that. You're now, you know, this vehicle is confiscated until you go to court. Like,
I can't wait to get caught in a medium speed chase on my e-bike and it never goes over 28 miles an hour because I'm on a legal class 3 bike, and then they pull me over and they're all angry and I'm like, did I ever go over 28 miles an hour? No, because I fucking can't.
I know. I just don't necessarily agree with this. But I do think that we agree that something needs to be done because, yeah, things aren't good. I mean, I saw two high school age chicks. No, not high school age. That's wrong. I'm now 37. I have no concept of how old anyone is. They're either adult or 5 years old.
So they were somewhere between 14 and 25 years old.
Nah, they were probably somewhere between 12 and 7, probably 12 and 14. But there was two girls on a bike, and it was just terrifying. Like, they're like ripping ass down the street, and one of them is sitting on like the rear integrated built-in frame luggage rack thing and like holding on with one hand and taking a selfie and eating a snow cone with the same hand or something. I don't know. It was just too much. And I'm like, God, people are going to get so hurt. So
now, on the other hand, I think some people need to get hurt. Hopefully not innocent people, but like, I don't know. I take a little bit of a small government approach, and also some people need to have some common sense. And I think if you have too many people that are never required to have any common sense, then those people reproduce and we end up with a whole bunch more people with zero common sense. That's pretty brutal, but it's my opinion.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with you, because
I'm weird. Yeah. I also, like, if I'm rolling down the street and they're not causing any trouble, and I see a group of six kids on Surons doing fat wheelies down the street, I smile.
I do too. However, the thing that gets me is going back to the street right in front of the shop is a one-way street, and there is a lot of on-street parking. Okay, we're going to go back in time.
Oh, Jesus.
This used to be a two-way street. By making this section of one-way street or two-way street one-way, they were able to put a lot of parking in this diagonal parking, which downtown Salida really needed. So now here
Fun
I
fact,
am.
In 1971, the street went from two-way to one and a half-way.
No, it happened in like 2019.
I'm trying to make fun of you. You need to just take it.
I know.
All right.
But here I am. I need to back out of my diagonal parking spot. I am looking the direction that cars should be coming from, and I back out in front of this kid that's 12 o'clocking it down the street. I'm going to feel terrible because I don't want anyone to get hurt. I agree with you. Some people are going to get hurt, and you need to get hurt if you're being an idiot, right?
I don't know. Like if I'm backing my car out and I cream a kid on a Surron doing a wheelie, I'm not going to feel bad at all. Maybe I'm weird, but it's like, you know, I like watching kids do wheelies on Surrons, but, you know, you want to do an adult shit, be an adult. And if you get creamed by someone else in a car, I don't know. Just how it is.
I understand that. But, you know, now where I'm going, though, is I can see from, like, I could walk out of the shop and with my own eyes, no magnification needed, I can see old railroad property that people walk dogs and ride dirt bikes on and all kinds of stuff. Just go 200 or the long way, go 500 yards around and you won't be in anyone's way. You won't, and kids playing aren't in the way, but do dangerous shit where you're not, you know, around other people.
I agree. You know, I 100% agree. Maybe I didn't articulate that well. I like seeing all that stuff. I want a little bit of mayhem in the world. I think that's a healthy thing. If you are in a completely sanitized environment all the time, that's just not somewhere that I want to live. Anyway,
no, I don't either.
There need to be rules. Totally. Like, there got to be some rules. I guess kids were just smarter and pick their battles a little bit more. Like, go do your wheelie sessions in some parking lot somewhere. Like, that's great. You're not bothering anybody.
All right.
We should move on from that one. That was crazy. We've been recording for 2.5 hours. And
no, we haven't.
It's pretty crazy.
So Rick has a question. Hey, y'all. I have a 2021 Kona unit that I would like to use for commuting to work a few days a week during the summer. It's a 12-mile ride each way, and it's half paved, half gravel path. To make the ride faster, I want to swap out the 2.6 Recons for some 700x50 gravel tires. Will changing the overall tire diameter this much cause any negative ride characteristics? Thanks for your help. Happy New Year's. Hope you have an amazing 2026. I would say yes, it's going to change. It's going to make the bike probably twitchier than you want. What do you think, Kenny?
I agree. I don't like how mountain bikes ride with ultra skinny tires. I think air volume is your friend, especially on something like a unit, assuming that it's full rigid like I think that it is. I think a little bit of air volume is going to be healthy. I think you would be much happier getting a more file tread high volume tire. And there's a reason why everything is going to higher volume tires on road bikes, on gravel bikes, you name it. So my vote would be get some Aspens or something similar to an Aspen if you want something a little bit faster rolling, and keep the air volume in that like 2.4 ballpark. Personally, I wouldn't go smaller than that. I think 2.4 to 2.6 is the right answer.
What about the other thing that, I mean, everything Kenny said is correct.
I got something for you. Is this, I assume it's a 29er?
Yeah, unit's a 29.
Shoot. Hey, we'll sell this gentleman some tires super cheap. I've got some 29 2.5 tubeless ready Surly extraterrestrials, and they look like supermoto tires.
Well, I was going to go a little, I don't think that's a bad thing. Oh my God, they have so many tires, and they're not... I would buy... Can't find them on their website. Schwalbe does make some 29 by 2.5 slicks, and I think that gives you... So...
You should look up the extraterrestrial. They're freaking sick. When I, for a minute, made my Levo SL a road bike, that's what I ran on there. They were sick.
I don't disagree. The Big Apple comes in a pretty, oh God, I can't read these sizes. Let's put them in inch sizes. I can't find it right now, but Schwalbe makes a big commuter tire that's going to have the flat resistance you really want. I've ridden them on a buddy's Karate Monkey before, and they haul ass. But the thing that Kenny didn't touch on with the air volume thing is the other part of it is your tire diameter plays into your mechanical trail number, which is... Trail is the holy grail on your bike riding well, and running the right trail or running the right tire diameter keeps the trail within spec, which makes the bike ride better. And I would run something in that 2.4, 2.5 from Schwalbe that was a true road tire. I mean, and it can have a little bit of tread, but they'll have, like, they call it Green Guard, but like a Kevlar strip to help prevent glass and stuff from getting through there. So I would look into something like that if you don't want to buy tires from Kenny. But if you want Kenny's tires, you can email him at ieatnugs@jra.com. None of that's real. Don't email him there. Send us an email. We'll get you in touch. Crap. I got to find the next email. Oh, God. Let's see. This is from Square Peg Round Hole. Hello. I remember hearing some bird wheel banter on past episodes and found old episodes 118 and 73. Jesus Christ. They went way back. And took notes. I'm curious to hear more thoughts on how the Hawk 30s compared to alloy wheels in terms of ride compliance. I'm going to answer this as we go. I have no clue. I haven't ridden alloy wheels in a long time. I'm going to remember this. Is the difference noticeable, or is most of the benefit due to weight savings? VR1 was making the rim for Bird, is my understanding. I'm pretty sure that's right. But I never rode that rim with steel spokes. And if you get in the way, way back and go back to the mountain bike radio days and yada, yada, yada. We really figured out early on that the depth of rim on the mountain bike plays a huge role in how the wheel rides. So if one were to build that really shallow rim again, or, you know, that same shallow rim with a steel spoke, would it ride well? I would assume yes, but you would have more weight. It's still going to ride well. It just might not have that same lightness and ride quality that the Bird offered. Also curious to hear if they need more maintenance and tensioning after the initial setup phase. I've now sold those wheels, but I think I trued them once, maybe. I think I like had one that was like a little bit, and that was it. So they say, little background. I like compliance, and I love the damped ground hugging ride feel. It boosts my confidence and helps me push on trails without getting bounced around. For this reason, I like the new Schwalbe radials and spent a lot of time getting my suspension dialed in the past. Last time I tried carbon wheels, I tried the Roval Control Carbon, and I liked the precise cornering, but I ultimately went back to DT Swiss XM481s for vertical compliance on longer rides, thinking the Hawk 30s would be the best of both worlds. I'm 135 pounds. I ride a Stump Jumper Evo.
He doesn't mention which controls, does he? What generation?
No.
Okay. I'm wondering if their current generation or the previous generation that was 25 mil internal and extremely tall.
Yeah, that wheel never looked good to me.
It was terrible. They had bad ride compliance and they all snapped in half. And now the new ones only partially snap in half and they have much better ride compliance.
Good to know. He is aggressive, but not a full send maniac. So what do you think, Kenny?
I think there's nothing wrong with a high quality aluminum wheel set. I think the XM481 is a great gold standard wheel. It's a high quality rim. It's going to last a really long time. It's not too heavy. It's not too light. That's just a great all-rounder. So I don't think you can go wrong with that at all. I don't think you're going to find any incredibly holy grail wheel coming from that personally. I really want to jump back into riding a more modern alloy wheel set. I've been riding carbon forever, but I wouldn't be opposed, especially on the e-bike, to go back to riding aluminum. But on an analog bike, I don't know that I could ever go back to aluminum. I can kind of get away with it on an e-bike, if you will. But I'm interested in the new crop of DT rims. I'm going to get all their naming wrong, so I'm not even going to attempt it. But it's the generation after the 481. I think it started with an FR rim, if I remember right. But anyway, I don't even want to say I'm wrong. But they are running a new alloy, and they're quite strong. I just don't know if they make like a really weight-weeny one yet in that new alloy. Anyway, I don't know if that answered the question or not. But generally speaking, very big blanket statement here. Is there a small damping characteristic difference in Bird wheels? Probably. But most of your characteristic of your wheel, how it's going to ride, how strong it is, how flexy it is, all those things, it's rim hoop, rim hoop, rim hoop. Almost always. Mm-hmm. Hub and spokes, how much tension you have, how many spokes you have, pretty much irrelevant. Is all rim, rim, rim.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I sold my original Envy all-mountain wheels way back, like 2012 or 13, and went back to Stan's Crest. And at the time, I rode Envy XC29, very deep rim. All-mountain 29, very deep rim. My boss let me borrow his classic, you know, from that era. They weren't classic at that time, but, you know, classic in today's world. But, like, that same era of control rim, which was still fairly shallow, and the Stans rim, which was fucking nothing. You know, those rims are as shallow as can be, and the Stans rim just rode the best. And I think that I had those DT rims on the, what was that bike? The YT. And I don't think they were very compliant. I have DTs on the Canyon. I haven't spent much trail time on that bike, but yeah, it'd be really cool to try
DT carbon.
Yeah, they're DT carbon, but they're like the 1501, you know, system carbon wheel that's fairly deep, you know, by today's standards. So don't know if they're going to be super cush, whereas like what is that wheel, the Reserve 28, that rim's pretty shallow. Yeah.
God, by the way, I can't believe I'm just looking at DT Swiss's website. I was going to try to grab those rim part numbers. I cannot believe that they still make an XM421. It's a 25 mil wide all mountain, quote unquote, rim. Why does that even exist? Why? That's all. Just so silly. But I don't think any of those new, rims are in the XM series or the all mountain category of rim, unfortunately. I mean, that's an eyelided rim. XR391. Is this one finally 30 mil internal? No, that's 25. So that's, we don't care about that. They've also got to have better names on their rims. What the hell does this stuff even mean? It's not the weight in grams. So what the heck does it even mean? Sorry, some silence as I'm scrolling around here.
You can click crack around because I was pulling up the DT wheels right now, or the reserve wheels right now, just trying to get some specs on them. Let's see.
So I could be wrong, but I think the two new rims from DT that are alloy are the FR541 and the FR571. So both free ride category, which is kind of a bummer. I can't remember which one was which, like which one came out first. I'm pretty sure the FR571 is the newest of them, but I could be wrong on that. So I really wish they would take some of this design and just make a little bit lighter rim. That would be pretty sick.
But I'm looking at the reserve rims right now. The XE rim is 28 internal, 37 external, and 20 millimeters deep. The 30 SL, which is like the lighter weight, you know, like a, let's just call it a trail wheel. It's not really an enduro wheel. 30 internal, 37 external, 19 millimeters deep. So, you know, I really think there's a lot to the total depth that plays into that really well.
So the FR541 is around 570 grams, which is reasonable. But if they made a very similar 30 mil internal rim with a thick bead like this thing has, but make it in like that 500 gram ballpark, I think that would be just such a great rim. All right. Any other questions?
Nope.
I've got one other piece of news here. Atherton is doing, I believe, their first e-bike, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's going to be the DJI drivetrain and a few things about it. From what I can tell, maybe I'm missing all the stuff that it comes with. Like maybe this doesn't come with a drivetrain. Like there's no way this can come with a drivetrain. Let's see. Frame color. No. Let's go back a few clicks. But assuming they don't have any proper pictures of this thing because it's kind of, I guess, pre-release. But it looks to be pretty Atherton round tubey, which is pretty cool. And it generally makes my pants tight. It's freaking, I think the Atherton bikes look really cool.
So you're saying you're going to get one?
I don't know about that. I still work at a normal bike shop. I can't really be rolling out buying an Atherton bike. That's kind of a big faux pas. But I'm looking at, what does this thing come with? They're just saying, build one. It's 9,000 pounds, which is really not that bad. Top of the tree, factory level Fox suspension, 38 up front, Float X2 out back, and silky smooth XO transmission. So like that's got to be a whole freaking bicycle. That's freaking crazy. I'm just surprised to see an E Atherton with that build spec at that price. That's really crazy. And by the way, I think this got announced today or yesterday, but they've already sold out of all their pre-sale ones. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can't even buy one outside of the UK, EU.
Oh, bummer.
Oh, well, they only had 50 models. So the fact that the pre-sold sold out.
Yeah, I get it. It's not that many. But I think that's cool. I know I'm an e-bike guy, but I think that's really cool. I'd like to see one.
No, I mean, I think you're right. I think it's pretty cool.
I've always liked the Atherton bikes. Deep down inside, I'm super terrified of having a glued together bike. But this one might not be like quite like the other analog bikes that are glued together. And granted, I haven't heard of any problems with the Atherton bikes. But they're cool. They're freaking sexy bikes.
Yeah, it'd be really cool to throw a leg over one day. But, you know, the faux pas aside of working at a shop and buying another brand is working at a shop, you can employee purchase stuff and going to Atherton and being like, hey, cut me a deal. Like, yeah, as a shop person, you might get 10 or 15% off, but it's not the considerably more percent off that you get as an employee of a brand you stock and sell.
Yeah, I think if we called up Atherton and we're like, yo, We love your bikes. We want to talk about them. We run a podcast. Two or three people listen to it. What can you do for us? They'd be like, oh, yeah, normally they're $9,000, but for you guys, $10,000.
They'd be like, we'll get back to you. And they'd email you back like a month later, and they'd be like, yeah, we got to talk to Jimmy. And then they would email back like a month later. Then they would just never email back.
But yeah, Atherton e-bike. Go check it out. Hopefully they can come up with some cooler pictures. I don't know why they're so cagey about the pictures. It's pretty weird. I wish they would just have some high-quality pictures. That's really weird to me.
Well, I don't think it's weird. I think it's more...
I assume it's a psychological thing, clearly, that it gets people excited about it.
Well, here's the thing. They didn't show you the bike. So they got on the front page of Pink Bike, and they didn't show us the bike. They kind... Like, if you look through all the pictures, you know what this bike looks like. But you didn't get to see the whole bike. Like, this photo shows me the rear end, and I can see behind the chainring because the bike is kind of backlit. And this one shows me what the down tube looks like in front of the chainring and, you know, where the shock meets the down tube. And this one shows me the head tube. So, like, I know what this bike looks like, but then this profile shot of the bike doesn't show me anything below the top of the chainring. So I haven't seen this bike yet. So now, a month later, they're going to get to launch this bike officially, or, you know, it says opens pre-orders and shares details, and now they're going to get to launch the bike and get a whole nother round of press.
I get they're it. Not done. I get it. The marketing people are just, they're just got such a hard on because they love this, having multi-releases like this and getting people excited over multiple milestones, if you will. They just, that's the stuff they going. Just, they live on that.
Yeah, well, you know what I live on? Sleep.
Yeah. The marketing team is definitely harder than I am about these teaser pictures.
You're not like marble right now?
Well, I can only see part of the picture.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all I got.
Okay. That's all I got.
All right. Shut it down. See you.
Okay. Bye.
Oh, do we need to read stuff like patrons, or is that we can just insert that? Okay, cool. All right. Well, I'm going to stop recording then.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your right back.